This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. Zimbabweans head to the polls in the first election since the ouster of longtime ruler Robert Mugabe. The presidency is being contested by incumbent Emmerson Mnangagwa, the ruling ZANU-PF, and opposition leader Nelson Chamisa of the Movement for Democratic Change, who call this a crucial ballot.
It's not about the past, it's about the future. It's not about Mr. Mugabe, it's not on the ballot. It's about this candidate appealing to all the citizens to have a vote. If anything, my biggest task is to make sure that I unite this nation going forward.
Chamisa has accused the country's electoral commission of bias. Mr. Mnangagwa has pledged to revitalize the economy, attract foreign investment, and mend racial and tribal divisions. While some voters want change and fresh faces, Jacob said the incumbent is the right choice.
This guy is a good guy, and he's a man of peace. He's always talking about peace. Peace, peace, peace.
Polls show a close race with a September 8 runoff possible. As for Mr. Mugabe, he's throwing his support behind the opposition.
I can't vote for those in power who are the people who brought me into this state. I can't vote for them.
There have been reports of intimidation and coercion leading up to the ballot. Foreign media and international observers from the European Union, U.S., and Commonwealth are monitoring the ballot. In Mali, vote counting is underway in a delayed national election in a country beset by jihadist violence for the past 5 years when the last election was held. Two dozen candidates are competing with incumbent President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita seeking a second term. Mr. Keita's campaign manager, Bokari Traita, said there have been some incidents of violence, but he described them as isolated. Opposition candidate Sumaila Sisa said some electoral material was stolen, some polling stations were closed. This is VOA News. President Donald Trump's top economic advisers said the 4.1% second quarter expansion of the U.S. economy announced last week is sustainable over time. It's the fastest pace of growth in nearly 4 years. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin appeared on the Fox News Sunday broadcast.
I think you're beginning to see projections go higher. Our 10-year projections are at 3%, and we're comfortable. We're hitting these numbers.
On trade, Larry Kudlow said last week's agreement with the European Union will significantly reduce trade barriers over time. He said he's hopeful a breakthrough with Mexico and Canada, two key U.S. trading partners, will be announced soon. The Iranian currency, the rial, hit a record low Sunday, dropping to 112,000 to the dollar on the unofficial market, even as the country braces for renewed U.S. sanctions. The U.S. withdrew from the 2015 international nuclear agreement with Tehran. Behnam Bentaleblou is an Iran analyst with the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy.
A lot of that has to do with the domestic confidence that the Iranian citizens put into their currency and into their economy. And they usually look at the unofficial exchange rate or the free market exchange rate as a symbol of the health of the economy. And for various internal and external reasons, the Iranian currency has been in free fall.
The first phase of U.S. sanctions goes into effect next week. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan Sunday said his government will stand its ground against threatened U.S. sanctions over the fate of American Protestant minister under house arrest in Turkey for alleged involvement in the 2016 failed coup. Former diplomat James Jeffrey of the Washington Institute for Near East Policy said it appears the case against Andrew Brunson was on its way to resolution.
This latest development, however, came as a surprise because it was right after Pastor Brunson was released from prison, that is, essentially pretrial confinement, although his case was not lifted.
Thursday, President Donald Trump threatened large sanctions unless Ankara released Brunson, who's been jailed for nearly 2 years. He denies any wrongdoing. Palestinian teenager Ahed Tamimi was released from an Israeli jail after completing an 8-month sentence for kicking and slapping an Israeli soldier. The 17-year-old said she hopes to study law and raise the Palestinian cause in international forums. President Mahmoud Abbas praised her defiance as a model of civil resistance against land seizures and Jewish settlements in the occupied West Bank. Former Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif has been transferred from jail to a hospital after suffering heart problems. Sharif was convicted of corruption. The development followed last week's election in which the main opposition, Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf of Imran Khan, emerged with the most votes, handing defeat to Sharif's Pakistan Muslim League. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, July 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabweans are voting today in presidential election, but will former President Mugabe be the kingmaker?
I can't vote for Zanu-PF. I have said the two women don't seem to offer very much. So what is there? I think it's just Chamisa.
An analyst will tell us if Mr. Mugabe still wields influence in a country he ruled for 37 years. We have a report about one of the four female presidential candidates in today's Zimbabwe vote. A spokesman says DRC President Joseph Kabila stands by his decision to respect the constitution. And Liberian President George Weah declares his assets, but where are they?
That is not for me to say. In order to have any information from the declaration, you will have to pursue the court order to do that. The fact of the matter is that the GSD has confirmed that indeed he did declare his assets.
Eugene Fangon is Liberia's Deputy Minister of Information for Press and Public Relations, and Ethiopia's Prime Minister makes first U.S. visit to bridge a gap to the diaspora. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabweans are voting today in their country's first election since the military played a key role in removing longtime President Robert Mugabe, who ruled the country for 37 years. However, it appears Mr. Mugabe may still want to be a kingmaker. As Kuzai Zenavashi reports from Harare, Mr. Mugabe called a news conference yesterday, Sunday, and announced what appeared to be an endorsement of Nelson Chamisa of the opposition MDC Alliance.
Mugabe's address comes after political parties finished campaigning as required by law. Mugabe, who is not happy with the current government of President Emmerson Mnangagwa, says he looks forward to this election.
We have had, since November, an environment in our country which was far from being free, even politically. Later on, constitutional and legal.
The contest puts President Mnangagwa and ruling ZANU-PF party against Nelson Chamisa, the 40-year-old leader of an opposition coalition called the Movement for Democratic Change Alliance. Mugabe, who critics say still has a strong base of support, says he's throwing his weight to the opposition.
I can't vote for ZANU-PF. I can't vote for the party or those in power who are the people that have brought me into this state. I can't vote for them. So it's the MDC, Maimjuru, Kupe, and 22 others. I have said the two women don't seem to offer very much. So what is there? I think it's just Chamisa.
Munyara Zidodo is the editor of Open Parley, an online publication that covers Zimbabwe's parliament proceedings and political developments.
Very tactical move by Robert Mugabe, trying to have the last say on this election and trying to exert his influence, obviously trying to derail Emmerson Mnangagwa's campaign, and clearly he's still very bitter about what happened in November.
Mugabe says people should be hopeful the elections will usher in much-needed stability.
Let us all pray that tomorrow brings us good news. And I believe good news to everyone is that we get our freedom back, that we get our democracy back.
Dodo says while Mugabe's move to endorse the opposition may be a game changer, he feels Mugabe has lost touch with reality. He says Mugabe was clearly off tune at the press briefing when he spoke about his roof that is due for renovation at his lavish mansion when most Zimbabweans are suffering. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinavashe from Harare.
A Zimbabwean political analyst says former President Robert Mugabe's news conference Sunday may likely sway the minds of about 30% of the electorate. Mr. Mugabe told reporters in Harare that he will not vote for the ruling ZANU-PF that he led for 37 years. He also said two of the four female presidential candidates, Joyce Mujuru and Tokozani Kupe, do not seem to offer very much. What is left to choose from, says Mr. Mugabe, is 40-year-old Nelson Chamisa of the opposition MDC Alliance. Analyst Rejoice Ngwenya says the former president still has his followers, especially those who benefited from his generosity over 37 years.
A lot of people, you know, have always been expecting that he would eventually come out and state his case more clearly, because so far it has just been a rumor that he is rooting behind Chamisa. But there's a lot of buzz and excitement ever since he said it yesterday, because I personally know that he's finding a way of getting back at his newly found enemy, Emmerson Mnangagwa. And we know that his structures never died. He might have been taken out of office, but the G40 structures are very functional. And I think that is his way of revenging.
As people are voting this morning, the former president's statement, is it likely to sway some votes towards Chamisa?
One can assume that plus or minus 30% of the ZANU-PF voters are generally pro Mugabe, and they've been sitting in the fence wondering where to place their vote, whether to place it in Juru or to place it other opposition. But Mugabe made it clear that there is no political capital that he personally benefits from, Jason Juru and Togodano Kupe. So this is the kind of Baba showed me the signal that these guys have been waiting for. So he has literally, with a stroke of a pen, swayed plus or minus 30% of the former ZANU-PF people to Nelson Chamisa.
Rejoice, President Robert Mugabe ruled Zimbabwe 37 years. Do you think he still has support among the people of Zimbabwe?
Well, it would be folly to really put one's head on the block and say definitely he has support. But remember that this man was extricated rather suddenly. And I feel that there's a couple of hundreds of thousands of people that are benefited from his so-called generosity. And I do not think that those structures really died away. I tend to feel that this man still has a certain residual chunk of supporters that are willing to root behind him.
So, after 37 years, President Robert Mugabe may still be a kingmaker in Zimbabwe.
Ironically, this is the reality, this is the fact which we need to confront, that this man is still held in high esteem by his people. And this is the kind of ace that perhaps Mnangagwa wasn't expecting. So, obviously, Mnangagwa knows the impact and the effect of this statement. And I think the man Mugabe now is holding a card that might sway the electorate towards Chamisa.
Rejoice, thank you very much again. It's always nice to have you.
I appreciate that, James.
Rejoice Ngwenya is a Zimbabwe political analyst. He was speaking with me from Harare. Today's Zimbabwe presidential election features 23 candidates, four of whom are women. One of the female candidates is Tokozani Kupe of the opposition MDCT party, which is a splinter group from the main opposition Movement for Democratic Change party, once led by the late Morgan Tsvangirai. Kupe hopes to make history by being Zimbabwe's first female president. Reporter Ade Gondo attended Tokozani Kupe's final rally held in Bulawayo.
Tokozani Kupe's MDCT party is facing not only a firmly entrenched ruling party, the ZANU-PF. It's also facing an opposition coalition led by Nelson Chamisa, the Movement for Democratic Change, or MDC, Alliance. They are all running candidates for president and also for the 210 seats available in the legislature. The MDCT's presidential candidate, 54-year-old Tokozani Kupe, says her party cannot afford to run candidates in all the districts. She, however, believes she could still win the presidential vote.
History has taught us that even if you filled all the 210, you will not win all of them. Even since 2000, even when we're united as the MDC, we've never won 210. Even at our best in 2008, we won 100 seats. So we realize that fielding candidates in all the 210, especially in areas where you know you're not going to perform better, you know, we realize that we'll just be expending our energy where we are not going to perform well. And because of resource constraints, we didn't have enough money.
Tokozani Kupe formed the MDC-T party a few months ago after failing to win control of the main Movement for Democratic Change party. She blames the setback to gender bias and to tribalism. But she says that she is determined to fight for the rights of the marginalized and for equal opportunity for all Zimbabweans.
The thing is that we've not been treated fairly. Even the media has been very, you know, hostile. If you look at what they did today, the news day. So I'm really wondering why, but we have not been treated fairly. But be that as it may, I've gone everywhere, I've done everything that I could to make sure that I garner as many votes as possible. Because it is clear that as women, already we have been pegged, you know, into a certain corner. To say you are just followers, you have got nothing to offer. But for me, I would like to say this, we are not followers. Like I said earlier on, we are in it to win it.
The leader of the main MDC alliance, Nelson Chamisa, is largely considered a usurper by the MDCT. Kupe, its leader, would not confirm whether she would work with Chamisa if either of them gained power. By Friday, anxious Zimbabweans will know the results of the 2018 elections. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Monday, July 30th. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. A spokesman for DRC President Joseph Kabila's ruling coalition says Mr. Kabila stands by his decision that he respects the Constitution. According to Andre Alain Atunde, the Constitution says a president cannot seek another term if he has served two terms. He says that the December 31st, 2016 agreement between Mr. Kabila and the opposition also reaffirmed that mandate. Candidates in the DRC have until August 8 to declare their candidacy for the presidential election, which is scheduled for December 23rd this year. In another development, Atunde says former DRC Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba is welcome to return home as a citizen, but he says whether Bemba can run for president will depend on the guidelines of the country's electoral commission.
I think as a citizen, he's welcome to Congo. But as a politician who wants to run for presidential election, it depends on the law. He can rise, but if he doesn't feel all the rights, he cannot be a candidate on presidential election. That's law. Law is law for everyone.
So what is the law, Mr. Atunde?
No, it depends. If you are condemned for corruption, you cannot rule. As Mr. Bemba is condemned by international courts, reasonably, it doesn't depend on me. It depends what are the conditions according to CENI. If according to CENI, Mr. Bemba doesn't feel all the conditions, of course, he will not run.
You know, President Kabila gave a speech a week or so ago saying that he will respect the Constitution. But people are saying, how come he has not said whether he wants to seek re-election?
No, I think you have to make a difference between rumor and reality. President Kabila made a statement 7 months ago, maybe weeks, that he will not run. So there is no action from him. Impeaching this decision or this commitment to be accomplished.
Did you say that the president said he will not run?
You know, when he made a statement before the Congress, he said, I will not run. Because he said exactly, I will respect the Constitution. But what said the Constitution? If a president had accomplished two mandates, he cannot run. And according to the 31st December 2016 ACO, opposition obtained the right and the right that as Mr. Kabila has accomplished two mandates, he cannot run. But I think the president will respect what he said and what the accords say.
Mr. Atunde, I look forward to talking with you again come August 8th so we can see what's going to happen.
Thank you. So next time.
Andre Ale Atunde is the spokesman for DRC President Joseph Kabila's ruling coalition. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has made his first visit to the United States with a speech to thousands of members of the diaspora in Washington, D.C. on Saturday. The trip coincides with the recent easing of tensions between Ethiopia and Eritrea. From Washington, viewer Jill Craig has more.
Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed says he wants to bridge the gap between his government and American diaspora communities. In his remarks to a crowded Washington, D.C. convention hall, Abiy invited the diaspora to come to Ethiopia and change the country for the better, not just for themselves, but for future generations. He also asked Ethiopians in exile to bring light to America.
He cannot do everything by himself. So he needs the support of everybody, and I'm hoping that everybody will support him too.
Abiy has been in office for less than 4 months, following the abrupt resignation of his predecessor. And he's been busy, releasing political prisoners, lifting the country's state of emergency, restoring mobile internet in the regions, and working to liberalize the economy. Those aren't the only changes. Abiy and Eritrean President Isaias Afwerki signed a declaration of peace earlier this month, ending a two-decade-old military standoff over a border dispute. Flights from Ethiopia to Eritrea have resumed, and embassies have reopened.
I never say like Ethiopia and Eritrea separate. We thought we are always together. Now we are together officially too. I love it.
Eritreans also attended the Washington event. Some said they were pleased to see Abiy, but wished their own president would implement similar reforms.
In Eritrea, you have no constitution, no freedom of religion, no freedom of expression, no freedom of business enterprise. It's all run by one person.
Abiy is scheduled to meet with diaspora communities in Los Angeles and Minneapolis next.
I am very excited. I'm very speechless. It's a very good sign for our country, and he's very great. I'm sure he's going to make us a great country.
Ethiopians comprise the second largest group of African immigrants in the United States after Nigerians, and the largest concentration of Ethiopians outside Ethiopia is found in the Washington, D.C. area. Jill Craig, VOA News, Washington.
Liberia's General Auditing Commission, known as the GAC, said last week it had received President George Weah's declaration of personal income, assets, and liabilities. But the commission did not say what exactly did the president declare. Now, Liberians want to know where the assets are. Eugene Fangon, Deputy Minister of Information for Press and Public Relations, says anyone wanting to know the details about the president's assets will have to go through the courts to get such information.
I can confirm to you that the President of Liberia, His Excellency President George Mani Weah, declared his assets on July 25th on Wednesday, and indeed the GSC confirmed that he did declare his assets.
Do we know how much he's worth?
Well, that is not for me to say. In order to have any information from the declaration, you will have to pursue the court order to do that.
So how would the Liberian people know that he did really declare his assets?
Well, it's not how the Liberian people will know. The fact of the matter is that the GSC has confirmed that indeed he did declare his assets in a press release. However, it's important to also note that if whatever information will come out of that declaration of his assets will have to be channeled through the judicial system, which happens to be the court.
So why did it take the president this long to do it?
It's not why it took him long. It's what it is. And what it is that the Constitution allows for the establishment of the LSCC. The LSCC guidelines provides for the last Friday in July, and the president is in conformity with the law. It's the law, and as such, the president will not allow a small group of people to bully him into submission or to bully him to the point where he must cave into the demand.
When you say LSCC, are you talking about the Liberian Anti-Corruption Commission?
That's correct.
The declaration of assets was one of the arguments made by the university students that I spoke to you about on Independence Day. They demanded that the president declare his assets.
Well, here are the facts. It's facts versus fiction. The truth of the matter is the president took office on January 22nd. If the so-called university students, and I say so-called because the Student Unification Party, a well-renowned, well-respected, even the president respects that party, will not do something that is awkward. And the president took the oath of office on January 22nd. So you had February, you had March, April, May, June, now July. The LNCC guidelines provides for the last Friday in July. How is it possible that the president will declare his assets on July 25th, on a Wednesday, and he will stage a protest in front of the U.S. Embassy on the Thursday, July 26th, demanding him to declare his assets?
Eugene Fagan is Liberia's Deputy Minister of Information for Press and Public Relations. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin with athletics, where the city of Asaba, Delta State in southern Nigeria, is agog awaiting the arrival of Africa's best athletes, who will be competing not just for medals at the biennial of the African Athletics Championship that starts on Wednesday, but for places in the continent's team to the International Cup in Ostrava. Ahead of the championship, I spoke with athletics writer Deji Ugembo, who tells me what Africa should expect when the African Championship get underway from August the 1st to the 5th.
Kudos must be given to the Confederation of African Athletics for trying to make it very lucrative now. Overall, just four nations are expected to dominate: South Africa, Kenya, Nigeria, and Cote d'Ivoire. So in what order they emerge tops, that's the question that we can't answer yet. We've seen a lot of breakout athletes use this sort of competition to get into the eye of the world. So it's crucial, and most countries take it serious.
Staying with athletics, Kenyan athletics is once again under the dark cloud of doping, with reports that sprinter Boniface Muruasa has allegedly failed a dope test. As a result of this development, Muruasa was ejected from the Team Kenya camp ahead of the African Athletics Championship that starts on Wednesday in Nigeria. The sprinter, however, maintains his innocence. Jackson Tuwei is the president of the Athletics Kenya Federation.
Is this where we want to go? Is this what we want to do? Why are we doping? How come not a single athlete, not a single official, not a single medic has ever come up to say we know who is giving these drugs?
In cricket news, South Africa thrashed Sri Lanka in their opening cricket one-day international, reaching the winning target with 19 overs to spare. In squash news, Egypt national junior squash team was crowned the 2018 World Junior Squash Champions in Chennai, India, after defeating England in the final 2-0. And onto football news, Angola were crowned winners of the 2018 CASAFA Under-17 Championship with a 1-0 victory over South Africa in Sunday's final at the Stade de François Xavier Mpolui in Mauritius, claiming their first regional title at this age group level. Now to the CAF Champions League, where there were exciting games that were played this past weekend. Congolese giant TP Mazembe booked a spot in the last eight of Africa Elite Club competition after they drew 1-1 at Mouloudia Alger on Saturday, which ensured they will finish in the top two in Group B. Etoile du Sahel of Tunisia became the first side to book a quarterfinal place in the CAF Champions League when they beat Mbabane Swallows of Swaziland 2-0 at home on Friday in Group D. Compatriot Esperance is also through to the last eight after winning away in Uganda to ensure progression from Group A. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. And that's it for this Monday, July 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you in Africa a productive week.
Has it felt like your week's been dragging and it just won't end? Well, guess what? It's finally here, the weekend. And with the weekend, you know it, comes Music Time in Africa. Hey, everybody, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. This week boasts an amazing playlist from Nigeria to Kenya. Song of the Week comes from the Ugandan soul singer Maurice Kiria, and the real showstopper is Cameroon. You'll meet the talented singer-rapper Lady B from Douala.
Lady B sur le mic, dis-moi qui ne connaît pas. Attitude et la vibe qui commet de
and
gros
four débats. Superstars of Khmer pop music, Mr. Leo, Magasco, Minx, and Stanley Anow live right in the studio.
Et puis même je m'en fous.
Do not miss this one. This Sunday and the following Saturday, 15:05 and 20:05 UTC.